I want to start off by asking you a bit about the changes in the culture that you've described a lot better than most people out there from your first novel on. When I read your first novel, I went to a store and I bought the paperback. Yesterday, when I was looking up your new book, I found a digital copy on BitTorrent that I managed to download in all of 10 seconds. As both somebody who chronicles the culture and as somebody who creates content for a living, how do you feel about that fairly rapid change?
Well, I feel it's inevitable, and it's very much in the nature of what I've been describing since about 1980. You know, I've been telling people that emergent technology drives change, and that change is now exponential. And what you're describing is a result of that exponential change. I think that there's something in its nature, there's something in the nature of the randomness of the change drivers now that makes it extremely difficult to control outcomes. We don't legislate new technologies into existence. We legislate after the fact, and often long after the fact, because the people who create new technologies have no idea often what the most significant societal changes their technology causes will be. So if, you know, they don't know, we don't know, we can't know what the change will be until we see what people do with it. And that's where that's often where the problems arise.
So is there a role then for the kind of cultural protection that we have done? For example, in this country, we have, you know, certain quotas on the amount of Canadian content on radio stations and that sort of thing. Is there a role for that? Should it be changed? Should it be sort of pushed forward? Or does the digital age sort of render a lot of that moot?
I think I'm not sure. It's the digital, by its nature, seems to me to be post-geographical and transnational and transcultural. That said, I don't think it necessarily follows that nation states and cultures should automatically drop the mechanisms they've evolved to maintain some sort of integrity.
Sorry to interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So if you want to continue? I just wanted to let you know, but you know the idea for the video. We want to keep it as short as possible. So some. I mean, this is fine, but we want to keep the actual video as short as possible. So.
I have one more question for the video
portion,
really? and then we'll be good to go for the rest of the interview.
Yeah, I wanted to move too. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Whatever makes your life easier.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you, if you were starting your writing career today,
yeah,
if you were just beginning, would it be easier for you or more difficult both to get the audience and to make a decent go of it as a living, as a career? Would it be easier now than when you started? Or
I don't know, because I don't have any really intuitive understanding of the entry level position today.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's been true right through my career. Like, you know, maybe 5 years after I started, if someone who wanted to become a novelist of roughly the sort I am had asked for my advice, I would have been able to give them some advice. 8 years after I started, my experience wouldn't have been applicable. The change has been so constant that now when people ask me, I just say, I really don't know. I can see that there are new strategies underway, and that some of them seem to work, but I'm not really in a position to judge their efficacy, and I suspect that those strategies won't be as viable a few years from now. There will be new strategies constantly. I think people will have to invent the shapes of their careers in necessarily invent the shapes of their careers in ways that wouldn't have been possible when I started. I mean, what I did was basically an extremely traditional entry into my field.
I think that's it for our video component.
Sure.
I had a couple of other questions, but certainly you don't need to take those.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Do you want us out of here for the rest of this, or?
No, because we're not shooting something apparently afterwards, so
okay.
You feel free to
fantastic.
Stay.
I wanted to ask about the new book. So much of it is about the brand, and the brand is part of the culture. Why is that such an appealing topic?
Because it seems to me to be what we do, and I've been here. You know, I've been hearing since all through the final third of the 20th century. I was hearing that we were becoming a post-industrial society, and then I was hearing that we had become a post-industrial society, and we increasingly outsource the actual industrial part of what we do, when possible, to nations that haven't yet attained post-industrial status but desire it. So if that's in fact true, what is it that we do? How are we supporting all these people? Where's the money coming from? It seems to me that what we do in large part is brand and market. And we brand and market and the product that we exchange is one form or another of information. So purely as, you know, pure from a point of view of someone attempting a sort of literary naturalism in really a traditional way, it behooves me to examine what we seem to do the most of. The literary naturalists of the late 19th and early 20th century often wrote about factory workers and about the magnates who owned the factory. And I think I'm actually trying to do something very similar to that, except I'm looking at a different world. One in which intelligence in the strategic sense is in large part what the economy has become about. If I were left to my own devices, I would have a huge collection of these things.
I could track what you're saying all day long.
I want to talk a bit about the way that
you
view time. I was doing some research for this interview, and I did an hour of research and then another hour of listening to Namcar, the band that you'd recommended in one of your interviews. I came across another one where you talked about Library Square in Vancouver and how you envisioned how it would look 100 years down the line. You also talked in another interview about the idea of, you know, publishers, it's an easy way for them to sell your books by saying that you can see the future and that sort of. what is your relationship with time? How would you describe the way time works and the way you view it in your work?
Well, my view of time is that everyone lives in someone else's past and in someone else's future, always. And the future is a speculative construct, but history is also a speculative construct. We know more about it than we can know about the future, but our sense of what it was changes radically. What the 1920s thought the Victorians were and what we think the Victorians were, different worlds. And I imagine that what what people think the Victorians were 50 years from now will be as different a game as our view of the Victorians would be to the 20s view. And I think that's one of the gifts of traditional science fiction, that one of the gifts of the culture of science fiction is that it teaches kids that how things are right now isn't necessarily how things are always going to be, and it isn't how things were before. But that same culture of science fiction through most of the 20th century, at least in North America and particularly in the United States, tended to imagine the future with a capital F. And in the capital F future, everything is new and everything can be different. And that, I think that probably has something to do with the American experience of Western, the United States experience of Western expansion. If things aren't working out in Des Moines, you go west and you start a new city, and that will be the city of the future. It was never literally true, but it was there in the national psyche. And somewhere in the 60s or the 70s, I think that started to fall apart, and North Americans began to realize, as Europeans have always known, that the future always happens amid what's left of the past, and that we sort of live continually in a retrofit of the past. We're never going to invent a whole new world of new stuff. But that was the post-war vision of what the future would be. I think Blade Runner is probably culturally most important because I think it brought that home to a lot of people. You were looking at a future that was very, very technologically advanced, but at the same time was just a sort of big urban slum made of mostly very old stuff, retrofitted with new technology.
So when you bring that up, I wanted to ask you about, I was reading an interview where you said that your first novel was born of sort of pure terror. You worried it wasn't good enough, or that people would look at Blade Runner and think that you'd seen that and written. Do you still feel that same sort of fear when you start a new project now? Do you still feel any of that?
I'm never without it. It seems almost necessary to that some kind of anxiety seems. I seem to need it to fuel the process. With my first novel, I had good reason to fear that. I knew that I lacked the skill set. I knew that I didn't have the complete skill set for writing what I would consider to be a competent novel. And I knew that I would have to fake my way around the things that I lacked, which in fact I did do. And there are aspects of Neuromancer that fortunately have been mistaken for avant-garde intention that are simply the result of my not knowing how to do something traditionally as a novelist. And some of the technology really was invented because out of my lack of experience as a writer. Like my earliest experiments with what came to be called virtual reality, all the term didn't exist at the time I was doing this, had to do with I had the very common beginning writer's inability to move characters in and out of environments. I could write a person in a room, but I didn't know how to write him out of the room and get him down to street level. I hadn't learned that yet. So I invented a technology that allowed him to like turn a knob and be virtually somewhere else. But I don't know why the anxieties never gone away. Part of it is probably the result of my, however modestly, continuing to try to stretch a bit and work outside of my comfort zone. And I can't claim any virtue in that, because I actually do that because if I don't do that, I can't maintain interest in the work. It's more interesting when I'm working a little bit outside of my comfort zone.
We've taken up way too much of your time. One last question. What are you reading these days?
I think the book I've been recommending most consistently lately is a book by Lauren Bukes, which is spelled B-E-U-K-E-S. The book is called Zoo City, and it's a second novel, and she's South African. And so it's a South African noir urban fantasy, and it's just like amazing. She's really talented, and not that many people have heard of her yet. And it's really delightful to have a hot recommendation that people aren't going to get from that many other people.
Thank you so much for your time, sir. It's really a pleasure talking to you. Is there any chance I can steal your autograph before I...
Yes, you can.
I let you go?
You certainly can. I've immediately forgotten your first name.
Omar. O-M-A-R.
Okay. Now I remember. I have a...